This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
International action over Israel's acts of aggression against Syria after a new Israeli air raid hits the country. An imprisoned senior member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement is on a hunger strike for 2 weeks to protest Israel's extension of his solitary confinement. North Korea test fires an intercontinental ballistic missile. It says this shows the country's capacity of a fatal nuclear counterattack. It's good to have you with us. Now, beginning with Syria, the country has slammed Israel's deadly attack on the capital, Damascus. It says the United Nations Secretariat and the UN Security Council should also condemn the regime's aggression and hold it accountable for its crimes. The Syrian Foreign Ministry said that the UN should take necessary measures to punish the perpetrators of the crimes and ensure they don't happen again. The ministry noted the Israeli air raids were carried out at a time when the country was trying to recover from the recent devastating earthquake. It added that the Israeli raid also immediately follows a Daesh terrorist attack, which left more than 50 people dead in central Syria. Israeli missiles killed 5 people and left 15 civilians wounded in the capital in the early hours of Sunday morning. Iran's foreign ministry has slammed the West's, quote, shameful silence over repeated violations of Syrian sovereignty. Russia has also called the assault a flagrant violation of international law. Palestinian resistance groups have denounced the Israeli attack as well. A correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed El, reports from the scene of the Israeli attack, giving details about a latest strike by the regime on Syrian soil.
I am now in Kafr Susa area, just close to the residential building that was targeted and hit by an Israeli airstrike just last night. According to an official military source, of course, at 12:22 a.m. local time, Israel carried out an aggression on Damascus and its countryside. And according to the official military source, Syrian air defenses confronted the attack and shot down most of the enemy missiles. Just behind me is the large hole in the ground caused by an Israeli missile over here in Kafr Susa area, which is mostly a residential area. The building just behind me is a residential building. It's a residential area in Kafr Susa, despite the fact that yes, there are some government establishments like the Prime Minister's office, the Ministry of Interior. However, the building that was hit is a residential one. It's a residential compound where I am standing right now. This is definitely not the first kind of attack by Israel on Syria. Every couple of weeks or months, there's an attack in violation, of course, Syria's sovereignty and also the UN Charter and international law. However, still there is international silence over such attacks.
All right, historian and political analyst Marcus Papadopoulos tells us why the United Nations Security Council will remain silent on Israeli crimes against Syria.
Well, at a time when Syria is reeling in the aftermath of the devastating earthquake that struck the country, in which thousands of Syrian men, women, and children were killed, Syria and the Syrian people have been subjected to a military attack from one of its neighbors, namely Israel. The Israeli act of aggression against Syria was not just blood-curdling, but it also reveals again the brutal nature of the Israeli ruling elite. Of course, there will be no reaction from the United Nations Security Council. Why? Because if the matter was to be referred to the Security Council, then America and Britain, and very possibly France, would simply scupper any chance of the matter being discussed. Without Israel, it is very difficult to see how America would not only have managed to achieve mastery over the Middle East, but also how it would be able to preserve that mastery over the Middle East.
It's the 15th day of a hunger strike by a senior member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement held in an Israeli jail. Qadr Adnan is protesting against the extension of the solitary confinement. The 44-year-old was arrested during a raid on his home near the occupied West Bank city of Jenin earlier this month. He's been arrested 12 times and spent nearly 8 years behind bars. More than 7,000 Palestinians are held in Israeli jails. Hamas resistance movement has vowed to continue its support for the Palestinians languishing in prisons. Hamas says that the Israeli regime is subjecting the detainees to the most brutal forms of abuse. Tel Aviv has recently stepped up crackdown on Palestinians. In protest at the atrocities, the Palestinians have launched a general strike in the occupied Al-Quds and several West Bank cities. Mona Kandil says that Qadr Adnan has staged a number of hunger strikes to protest his detention by the Israeli regime, and she explains why Adnan has staged this new strike that's open-ended.
Israeli soldiers had arrested Palestinians. Qadr Adnan engaged in a number of hunger strikes in the past. Every time he succeeded to force the Israeli forces to end his illegal administrative detention in order that he stops his hunger strike. When he reaches literally verge of death, he ends his hunger strike after the Israelis, of course, stop his administrative detention. This time, he declared open-ended hunger strike the moment he was detained. Up till the moment, the Israelis are keeping him under administrative detention. If every, 2 weeks, they would be renewing his detention, and then they might give him a lengthy time that could last for years under the so-called administrative detention. So this is why this time he's again being engaged in an open-ended hunger strike in an attempt to force the Israelis either to prosecute him and tell him what are the exact charges against them, if there are any charges against him, or to end the administrative detention and release him.
In other news, North Korea says it's launched an intercontinental ballistic missile Saturday to confirm readiness for what it calls a fatal nuclear counterattack. The North's official news agency described the test as a sudden launching drill ordered by leader Kim Jong-un. The report said the move demonstrated Pyongyang's actual war capacity against hostile forces. The ICBM landed in the waters off Japan, and that after the North warned of an unprecedentedly strong response to the upcoming drills by the U.S. and South Korea. The missile test has drawn an angry reaction from Washington.
The DPRK once again launched a ballistic missile, this one apparently falling in the exclusive economic zone of Japan. That's happened before in recent months, but this is yet again a provocative act by North Korea. We call on others to condemn this action, to take appropriate steps, including the effective enforcement of sanctions.
This is an
Japanese foreign minister also called North Korea's move an absolutely unacceptable provocation. That was also echoed by South Korean foreign minister, who warned Pyongyang of more severe sanctions. South Korea and the U.S. have staged joint air drills involving an American bomber in response to North Korea's missile launch. Pyongyang has always maintained that it is the U.S. and South Korea that are undermining regional stability. The North says it's watching their moves and will take corresponding and powerful counteraction. Our Seoul correspondent Jennifer Chang tells us about the significance of North Korea's latest ICBM launch.
This was an unannounced order by North Korea for the firing of an ICBM for the first time in its history. Usually, an ICBM is fired with a great deal of pre-planning, and everyone knows the date and time at which it will be fired. But North Korea this time demonstrated that it is capable of making a surprise counterattack against a U.S. and South Korean nuclear attack by issuing an order at dawn yesterday, Saturday, and then less than half a day later, firing off a Hwasong-15 ICBM capable of reaching the entire continental U.S. And even though this is liquid-fueled, this ICBM could be fueled up in less than half a day. So North Korea is showing South Korea and the U.S. that no matter how many large-scale military drills they hold, they are not going to trump North Korea. North Korea says it will not allow Washington and Seoul to gain a long-term military advantage over Pyongyang.
The death toll from Cyclone Gabrielle in New Zealand has risen to 11. There are thousands of people who are also still missing. The fatalities increase after search teams recover two more bodies from the hard-hit Hawke's Bay region. The death toll is expected to rise. More than 6,400 people remain unaccounted for. The cyclone hit New Zealand's northernmost region a week ago and tracked down the east coast. It's caused widespread devastation, disrupting telecommunications and causing shortages of fresh water. Roads have been damaged, restricting access to some affected areas. Prime Minister Chris Hipkins says Gabrielle is the biggest natural disaster to hit New Zealand in this century. Russia has rejected U.S. allegations of committing crimes against humanity in Ukraine. It says the United States is fueling the crisis in Ukraine through supplying arms to the country and is just trying to justify that. The Russian ambassador to the U.S. says that such allegations also aim to demonize Moscow, calling them part of a hybrid war. The reaction followed comments by U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris at the Munich Security Conference. There, Harris said the United States has formally concluded that Russia has committed crimes against humanity in Ukraine. Also last year, the U.S. claimed that Russia committed war crimes in Ukraine. Moscow has repeatedly denied targeting civilians during the year-long war. It's in turn accused Ukraine of committing crimes against humanity against people in the northern Donbass region. Okay, now the Ukrainian military continues to bomb Russian-controlled civilian areas in the east. Our correspondent, Jana Miller, was just meters away from the site of one such attack in Donetsk, and he has this report as a first-hand account of that incident.
Now, it's been a while since Ukraine has hit the very center of Donetsk, but I was just in a cafe when huge explosions, the whole building shook, the glass shattered, a shell landed very close by, destroying shops. It's not clear if anybody's been killed yet. Now, there's three of these strikes I've counted. There may well be more. One of the main streets in the center of Donetsk. The missiles have landed right in the pavements or on the roads. It's a miracle that I haven't seen any bodies yet. There's a lot of people normally on the street walking by, and it's very lucky that I haven't seen any bodies so far.
Right now from Donetsk, let's bring in Jana Miller. Jana, good to have you with us. Was it a close call, really? Was it meters away from you? Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing new. There's been another close call from living here in Donetsk. I was at a cafe The building shook, glass, fugitive waving shattered. Two missiles landed 20 meters either side of the cafe, one hitting a central library in Donetsk, another one blowing out shops. Just if that happened an hour before, I'd walk past literally over the impact sites, I'd be dead right now. But that's been the reality for much of the time here in Donetsk. Ukraine hasn't hit the center for about a month now. Russian advances across Donbass, I think, is keeping the Ukrainian military more preoccupied with that. One of the missiles landed right outside, about 10 meters outside a busy supermarket. A toy shop was shattered, the windows shattered. Four missiles I've counted in all. And it really is very lucky that nobody was killed. I know that area very well. If it happened another day, frankly, if it happened another minute or another hour, there could have been a dozen dead. It's a civilian area, there's no military targets around there. But for people of Donetsk, this is just a normal story, or it hasn't happened for a month in the center. I've been planning to leave Donetsk for some time, but I've wanted to stay a little longer. Why? Because in a few days' time, it will be the anniversary of the Russian invasion, or as people, most people in Donetsk, call it the liberation operation. The Russians, of course, call it the special military operation. But there has been many people suspecting that Ukraine may well shell the center of Donetsk in revenge or to mark that anniversary. That may well be why that's happened today, and there's fears that it might happen again over the next few days.
Okay, Johnny, in terms of crimes against humanity, this is what the Washington is accusing Moscow of. Moscow is saying it's denying that. It said it's not hitting residential buildings. And you've been there, and you've been around the different parts on the battleground in different parts of Ukraine, and you've seen this firsthand, what you've seen in terms of crimes against humanity. Who is committing those crimes?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's many journalists in the west of Ukraine, and they can speak about what's happening there, but I've spent a lot of time here in Donetsk, and why this story is so important, and many may think, well, Russia is striking Ukraine, there's dozens, perhaps hundreds of soldiers dying or being wounded on the front lines right now, but the reason this story is so important of Ukraine, I say it's intentional targeting of civilian areas, and they've been doing it intermittently since 2014. I've been to countless sites, even today when I'm rounding a corner about to find another impact site, I'm just praying that there won't be bodies there, because so often I've arrived and there's just bodies in the street at a bus station. Often when the shelling's bad, when I see a bus station or market, I will avoid it or rush by because I know that's very likely to be hit. And this terror bombing, the targeting of civilians by Ukraine, is such an important story because it's one of the major reasons why the vast majority of people in Donetsk no longer want to be part of Ukraine. They feel they can't be part of Ukraine because Ukraine has been bombing and killing their people, been to the children's funerals. So that's why this is such an important story, why NATO continue to say that the only way to end this war is to continue to supply weapons to Ukraine. Well, there is another way to end this war, and that's by listening to civilians on both sides. And that's why this story is so important.
Okay, thank you so much for that. John Amin, our correspondent live for us in Donetsk. And that's all for this news broadcast from Tehran.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
القرآن
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
کتاب الله.
The ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, qawwi ala khidmatika jawarihi, washdud ala al-azimati jawanihi. وهب لي الجد في خشيتك والدوام في الاتصال بخدمتك حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. In this part, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, states, قَوِّ عَلَى خِدْمَتِكَ جَوَارِحِي وَاشْتُدْ عَلَى الْعَزِيمَةِ جَوَانِحِ. Strengthen my limbs in your service and fortify my ribs in determination. وَهَبْ لِيَ الْجِدَّ فِي خَشْيَتِكَ. Bestow upon me earnestness in my fear of you and continuity in my being's joint to your service. وَالدَّوَامَ فِي الْإِتِّصَالِ بِخِدْمَتِكَ. And I ask you these things so that حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين. I want these from you so that I can move easily toward you. This is somehow acting as the reason and justification why Imam Ali alayhi salam is asking all these requests from the Almighty Allah. All Imam Ali alayhi salam wants is not just being in the service of the Almighty Allah, or being determined in his service. He does not want earnestness for itself. What he wants is حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين, so that he will move easily toward Allah. وأسرع إليك في البارزين. He wants to be among the prominent. No, not just that. He wants to hurry to Allah among the prominent. He wants to be the first one. وأشتاق إلى قربك في المشتاقين. So that I desire fervently your proximity among the fervently desirous. وَأَدْنُوَ مِنْكَ دُنُوَ الْمُخْلِصِينَ, so that I move near to you with the nearness of the sincere. وَأَخَافَكَ مَخَافَةَ الْمُوقِنِينَ, so that I fear you with the fear of those who have conviction. وَأَجْتَمِعَ فِي جَوَارِكَ مَعَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, so that I gather with the believers in your nearness. In this regard, we discussed different concepts and different discussions were brought up in about this part of the Kumail supplication, but we were discussing the concept of certainty in the previous episode. We said that there are three different levels for certainty: علم اليقين, known certainty; عين اليقين, exact certainty; and حق اليقين, which is true certainty. We said that there is a difference between these three kinds, to be put in the best terms, different levels of certainty, that we try to elaborate on that with an example. We said, if we understand that there is a fire by looking at the smoke, it is علم اليقين, it is known certainty. But if we see the fire itself, it is now exact certainty, عين اليقين. But if we feel the burning fire ourselves, this is called حق اليقين, or true certainty.
My limbs for your service and sustain the strength of my hands to preserve in your service and bestow upon me the eagerness to fear you and constantly serve you so that I may lead myself towards you in the field with the vanguards who are in the fore rank and be swift towards you amongst those who hasten towards you and urge eagerly to be near you and draw myself towards you like those who sincerely draw themselves towards you and to fear you like the fear of those who believe firmly in you and that I may join the congregation of the faithful congregated near you.
Thank you, Allah,
now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever, the feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
So we mentioned these three degrees of certainty. Why? The point is that all these levels of certainty can be understood using the Quranic verses. But for getting certainty through Quran, first we should ponder in its verses to make sure of their truth and the reason for their revelation. The Holy Quran itself reads, وَإِن كُنْتُمْ فِي رَيْبٍ مِمَّا نَزَّلْنَا عَلَىٰ عَبْدِنَا فَأْتُوا بِسُورَةٍ مِّن مِثْلِهِ. If you are in doubt as to what we have revealed to our servants, then produce a chapter like it. So, now that you are not capable of bringing a chapter like it, This means this Quran is from us. Even the Quran says, قُلْ لَئِنِ اجْتَمَعَتِ الْإِنْسُ وَالْجِنُّ عَلَىٰ أَنْ يَأْتُوا بِمِثْلِ هَذَا الْقُرْآنِ لَا يَأْتُونَ بِمِثْلِهِ. Say, if man and jinn were combined together to bring even the like of this Quran, they could not bring the like of it. وَلَوْ كَانَ بَعْضُهُمْ لِبَعْضٍ ظَهِيرًا. Though some of them were aids of the others. Now, in view of these two holy verses, we can make sure that the Holy Quran is revealed from Almighty Allah, and then we can make sure of all its contents. Likewise, we can reach certainty about the teachings of the Imams, of the infallible Imams, alayhi wasalam, which are explanations of the Quranic verses. And finally, that's how we can join the righteous, faithful servants. That is how we can أشتاق إلى قربك في المشتاقين. That is how Imam Ali alayhi salam is teaching us to be among the fervently desirous ones. That is how we can try to be from among the believers in the nearness of the Almighty Allah. وأجتمع في جوارك مع المؤمنين. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
A new report has revealed that the U.S. lied about Afghan civilians killed in 2021 drone strike. Reports say U.S. officials knew the strike killed 10 family members, including 7 children. They covered it up for over a year. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, "Erroneous assumptions and biases by U.S. analysts led to the Kabul drone attack that killed 10 civilians, including 7 children, during the Pentagon's chaotic August 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan. An internal military investigation has reportedly found. Tensions were running high on the day of the drone strike, just 3 days after the August 26 terrorist bombing that killed 13 U.S. troops and more than 100 Afghans at the Kabul airport. The probe by U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, noted that another attack by ISIS was expected that day and that intelligence reports indicated it would involve a white Toyota Corolla, the New York Times reported recently. Military analysts observed a white Corolla stopping at what they believed was an ISIS compound, so they began tracking the car, the report said. After the vehicle pulled into a gated courtyard near the airport hours later, a Hellfire missile strike on the car by an MQ-9 Reaper drone was ordered. Later that day, U.S. officials announced that they had successfully prevented another terrorist bombing. As reports of civilian deaths began to surface, U.S. officials said they had no indications of such casualties and were investigating whether a secondary explosion might have killed someone. However, the Times said CENTCOM's investigation revealed that analysts reported within 20 minutes of the strike that civilians may have been killed. Within 3 hours, they had assessed that at least 3 children were killed. Military officials continued to conceal what they knew about the strike. 3 days later, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley said the attack was righteous and that it had killed an ISIS facilitator and unknown others. The driver of the Corolla turned out to be an aid worker who had spent the day picking up his employer's laptop, taking colleagues to and from work, and loading canisters of water into his trunk to bring home to his family. The CENTCOM investigation was completed a week and a half after the drone strike and was never released to the public, the Times said. 16 months later, the newspaper obtained 66 partially redacted pages of the report only after suing CENTCOM under the Freedom of Information Act. The probe detailed how biases led analysts to make tragically wrong assumptions. For instance, they concluded that a package loaded into the car contained explosives because of its careful handling and size, and that the driver's erratic route meant he was trying to evade surveillance. Meanwhile, Truthout noted in this regard, U.S. military officials knew that an August 2021 drone strike in Kabul likely killed Afghan civilians, including children, but lied about it. A report published recently revealed New York Times investigative reporter Azmat Khan analyzed a 66-page redacted U.S. Central Command report on the August 29, 2021 drone strike that killed 10 members of the Ahmadi family, including 7 children outside their home in the Afghan capital. The strike took place during the chaotic final days of the U.S. ground war in Afghanistan just 3 days after a bombing that killed at least 182 people, including 13 American troops, at Kabul's international airport. Zamari Ahmadi, a 43-year-old aid worker for California-based nonprofit Nutrition and Education International, was carrying water containers that were mistaken for explosives when his Toyota Corolla was bombed by a Lockheed Martin Hellfire missile fired from a General Atomics MQ-9 Reaper drone. As reports of civilian casualties began circulating hours after the strike, U.S. military officials claimed there were no indications that non-combatants were harmed in the attack, while stating that they would investigate whether a secondary explosion may have killed or wounded people nearby. U.S. military officials initially claimed the righteous strike had prevented an imminent new attack on the airport. However, they later admitted that the botched bombing was a horrible mistake. The military's investigation was completed less than 2 weeks after the strike. However, it was never released to the public. The Pentagon said it would not punish anyone for killing the Ahmadi family. However, as the Times details, portions of a U.S. Central Command investigation obtained by the New York Times show that military analysts reported within minutes of the strike that civilians may have been killed and within 3 hours had assessed that at least 3 children were killed. The documents also provide detailed examples of how assumptions and biases led to the deadly blunder. Military analysts wrongly concluded, for example, that a package loaded into the car contained explosives because of its careful handling and size, and that the driver's erratic route was evidence that he was trying to evade surveillance. Furthermore, the investigation refers to an additional surveillance drone not under military control that was also tracking the vehicle but does not specify what it observed. The Times confirmed that the drone was operated by the CIA and observed children, possibly in the car, moments before impact, as CNN had reported. Hina Shamsi, an ACLU attorney representing families of the victims of the strike, told the Times that the investigation makes clear that U.S. military personnel saw what they wanted to see and not reality, which was an Afghan aid worker going about his daily life. When confirmation bias was so deadly in this case, you have to ask how many other people targeted by the U.S. military over the years were also unjustly killed, Shamsi added. Daphne Evitar, who heads Amnesty International's Security with Human Rights Program, called the new report more evidence than we need a huge change in how U.S. uses lethal force and assesses and reveals its consequences.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
RIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations. Democracy in History. Part 1.
Rome, the sacred Christian empire. The land of war and glory. The land of great churches and hidden Mithraism temples. A land built on the remains of Greece, Greek gods, Greek memories, with colonies in 3 continents and a great eastern enemy, Iran. The land of Persia, the land of Ahura. A land stretching from the Indus to the Nile, with rulers chosen by Ahura Mazda and soldiers adorned in steel to the teeth. A land that went down on its knees by Alexander's attack, but was not destroyed. And Greece, ancient Greece. The glorious Mediterranean civilization and its gods, theaters, and philosophers. An ancient civilization that dates back 2,000 years with unique methods of ruling over people. People who built those governments and their methods of governance over themselves. Athens, 392 BC. Socrates is accused of impiety and corrupting the minds of the youth of Athens. The jury at his trial found Socrates guilty and sentenced him to drinking the poison hemlock. Socrates says people do not like to have their knowledge questioned, but I know that I know nothing. This sentence led Socrates to death in Athens. As Plato puts it, Socrates was the first victim of democracy.
This is a betrayal of our gods. We're giving the reins of affairs to a bunch of people who are thirsty for fame, position, and money. They are destroying the main role of traditions.
Socrates believed that just as a shoemaker or mason needed skills to do his job, a governor needed to be skilled too, to have the political knowledge to rule. Socrates made fun of Greece's democracy and believed that competence and eligibility were needed for a government. The biggest claimants to that eligibility were Athenian noblemen and wealthy people who thought their origin and pedigree already provided them with that competence. But Socrates believed that this competence and knowledge could be achieved by training and education.
None of them wanted to have anything to do with morality or justice. They wanted to have nothing to do with intelligence or knowledge. They just wanted power and a system based on the fight for political survival and even lies and deception. Let me put it this way. You can fully realize the meaning of democracy if you compare it to other political systems. Demagogism is the opposite form of democracy. Socrates believed that their version of democracy was in fact another form of demagogism.
Socrates said, "If you kill a man like me, you will hurt yourself more than you hurt me." But he didn't mean the court, he meant the people of Athens. We remember the Athenians for their democracy today. But this is not their reality. Athens had three social groups: the rich and nobles, craftsmen and traders, and farmers. The rulers of Athens were called Archon. Archon was a chosen ruler who held permanent tenure at first. In 752 BC, it turned into a 10-year position, and then in 683 BC, it became a 1-year position. But even that did not change anything. The social inequality and class differences of the Athenians brought about the first sparks of change. The considerable growth in the number of non-Athenians and slaves was a serious threat to the Athenians. In fact, their lives depended on it. The nobility and landowners did almost nothing, but it was by the labor of the slaves that Athens was standing.
در آتن 400,000 نفر زندگی میکرد. 200,000 نفرش برده بود.
400,000 people lived in Athens. 200,000 of them were slaves. These slaves were either war prisoners or sold into slavery somehow, or transported to Athens from North Africa or other places, such as Phrygia or north of Greece, and were set to difficult works.
به اصطلاح به کارهای مشکلی گماشته می شدن. اینها به هیچ وجه، نه فقط به هیچ وجه از حقوق مساوی با دیگران.
They did not enjoy the same rights as other people of Athens, and even their life was in the hands of the eunuch or the person who owned them. 70,000 out of these 200,000 people were metics. Metic is a Greek term which means stranger or foreigner. They were not slaves. Those foreigners were not slaves, but they were not considered ordinary citizens either.
There was a parliament that consisted of citizens, citizens who had already been purged, selected, and chosen. They did not include all the city residents.
The difference between smallholders and big landowners fanned the first flames of protests into life. The coalition of the Athenian farmers and craftsmen led the famous poet Solon to become the archon and managed to pass laws with his great authority. Solon's reforms divided the Athenians into four groups. Under his laws, the sale of debtors who could not pay their debts was forbidden, and slaves who had already been sold were returned to the country. The most important part of Solon's law was the creation of a council of 400 for selecting archons, in which everyone except women and slaves could vote and choose an archon from among nobles and traders. That was the first election in the world, the father of today's democracy.
یک جوان 18 ساله میتونه در اون تجمعی که در شهر
An 18-year-old youth could join the crowd that had gathered in Athens in the place called Agora, the city's public square. He could express his opinion and criticize the government and judges. He could get people excited to incite that crowd. He could argue his opinions with other youth and older people, anyone in general. He could meet influential government officials. It was something very exceptional.
There were 12 tribes in Athens. Each one of them lived in a certain neighborhood in the city. Each one of these neighborhoods was called Dame, which means a place where a tribe or ethnic group lived. They were all related to each other. They were the free people of the city. Democracy meant their representatives had to rule.
Not anyone was allowed to take part. Who could take part? Noblemen, those who had Athenian origin. So women and slaves were excluded from decision-making and taking part in determining their own political, social, economic, and cultural fate.
They comprised 1/8 of the whole population of the city. The Athenian democracy belonged to 1/8 of the people.
So democracy at that time bore no relationship to our modern concept of democracy. It can be said that the only similarity found was that the people who were members of this tribe kept fighting each other and making decisions.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.